Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevomis Daf Yud Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the second line from the top of Daf Yud Dalid. It's imperative for us to point out that we are in the middle of a discussion. The discussion is actually quite long, covering several dapim of our Masechta. The introduction to this sugya appeared at the lower part of Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis. The issue can be described or entitled Loisis Goydidu, the issue of disparate practices within the Jewish community. The issue that is, let us say, of immediate importance concerns the machloikis Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel regarding Tzoras Erva, the co-wife of a prohibited woman in the context of Yibum. Of course, we saw the Mishnah at the beginning of our Masechta, which indicated that Tzoras Erva are forbidden, that if, let us just take our simple example of Reuven and Shimon, two brothers, Reuven married the daughter of Shimon, and Reuven had another wife, we call that a co-wife or a Tzora, upon Reuven's death, leaving no children. So not only is Shimon restricted from marrying his daughter in Yibum, but also the other wife that Reuven had as well, the co-wife. That turns out to be the opinion of Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai, they allow the co-wife. And running throughout this Gemara is the issue of lois is goydidu, or alternatively, does it appear as if there are two Torahs, two laws that govern Klal Yisrael, where you have some people doing this way and some people doing that way. Some people allowing Yibum to be done with the Tzoras Erva and others not. We noted in our previous discussion that Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish seemed to argue regarding this matter, where Reish Lakish took a more conservative approach, asking how can it be that you have disparate practices within the Jewish community. And Rabbi Yochanan responded in the give and take that we saw in our previous Gemara, which seemed to indicate that that is not a concern. And the last citation was in fact this issue of the Tzoros Erva. The Gemara that we pick up with is actually a Gemara that we have in a bracketed section. Not only that, but it's a unique situation where you have an internal bracketed section. We'll try to explain all of that as we go on in the Gemara, even though at the end of our previous year we touched on the structure. But you might note on the lower part, the last quarter of Daf Yud Dalet Amud Aleph, you notice a crown shape, and you might notice a number 1 to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. We have an indication under our Mivneh heading at the lower part of Yud Dalet Amud Aleph, today's daf, the lower part, it says Mivneh, and we indicate that this structural note goes until the beginning of Tes Zayin Amud Aleph. Notice how long the sugi is. And the crown marking will appear in two directions. It indicates these are Makoros Velchochos Shebeis Shammai Lo Osu Kedivrehem. The inverted crown shape will indicate Osu Kedivrehem. And if you say that Beis Shammai actually practiced what they preached, that would indicate v'loy choshishu l'shtei toros. They were not concerned with this issue of creating the appearance as if there are two toros. So be it. If you can have disparate practices, that is as far as we'll call it the superstructure of the next couple of dapim. The debate will continue, will rage on. Does Beis Shammai follow their opinion when they are arguing, let us say, with Beis Hillel? Did they actually follow what they said? Did they practice what they preached, if you can put it that way? We also have a little indication, a starred note, that throughout the entire structure, throughout the entire discussion, we say b'chol hamalach yesh rak echod b'kivun, there's only one crown shape with the point facing up, which would indicate only one attempt to initially show that Beis Shammai did not follow what they did. Throughout the sugya, we will be trying to demonstrate that they did follow what they preached. As the sugya unfolds, though, you can see through the additional markings, there's an inverted triangle marking that appears. Those are dechios, vekushios, those are rejections and questions that are raised upon that which had previously followed. In addition, we have another marking, the inverted crown with a colored-in tip. That represents mekoros shelo nitchu. These are sources that do not become rejected. In other words, sources that stick in the attempt that we're making to show that they follow what they preached, the source that's brought in remains, and it resists or it's successful in rebuffing any challenge brought to it. Now, we turn to the upper part, to the point at which our daf begins today, the second line from the top. So you notice we have two forms of brackets. There's the angular bracket, and that is the longer bracket in this particular sugya, taking you down to that first crown marking. And then there's a curlicue bracket, or brace, some call it, which is shorter, and you can see the length indicator for that, which you see on the left-hand side of the Gemara text. Now, as far as what takes place here, we have a note the starred note, sograim toch sograim. We're looking at our note at the upper part of Daf Yud Daled, the angular brackets. We indicate achrei sograim elu, a Gemara ad rosh tezayin amalef, after the angular brackets, the Gemara until the top of tezayin, Tovi Makoros Volchos Kede Lavar in Beishame Osu Kidivrayam Befoil Olo. As we said before, we'll see sources. Did Beishamai actually practice what they preached or not? Kol Hahoichos Chutz Minorishon Yu Bikivun She Osu Kidivrayam. All of the attempts in the Gemara will be to show that they did practice what they preached, with the exception of the first attempt in the Gemara. And then we talk about the curlicue brace, toch sograyim elu, within these braces, hagemara mevia machlikis amoroyim noisof shemakbil lemachlikis Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. Tomorrow we'll introduce another machlokis amoroyim. We'll see Rav and Shmuel paralleling the machlokis Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish that we discussed in our previous shiur. Acharei sograyim elu hagemara male hasheila, after these curlicue brackets, the Gemara will raise a question. Lefi hamandamar de Beis Shammai osu kidivrayim, according to the opinion that Beis Shammai did practice what they preached, eich ze mistader im ha'isur shalois is going to do. How are we to resolve that with the problem of our opposition to factionalized Jewish practice? Loi sisgo to do. Lo sasu agudos agudos. The point that we featured at the end of our previous shiur. So as we said at the opening, we're really in the middle of a discussion. And with that, let us now get into the Gemara text. Second line from the top. Ubiplukta de Rav Shmuel. In other words, the machlokis, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, that we saw concerning the disparate practices within the Jewish community, where Reish Lakish seemed to challenge that, and Rabbi Yochanan says it's acceptable. So this argument, or this discussion, continues. The Rav Omar Lo Asu Beishamay Kedivrahem. Rav, in the interest of preserving, we'll say, unity. So Rav says that Beishamay never really practiced what they preached. In other words, if there were two brothers and one died, leaving no children, and leaving two widows, one of whom was forbidden to the surviving brother, the co-wife Beishamay would not have allowed, even though they permit it in theory, they wouldn't have actually allowed the surviving brother to marry that co-wife of the erva. Once again, Beishamay will tell you that, you know, as far as a law on the books is concerned, it is allowed, but practically speaking, Rav tells us Beishamay didn't follow what they preached. Ushmuel Omar Osu Vyosu. Shmuel says, boy, oh boy, they did, and did they ever do it? They followed what they said. Now, the Gemara asks, Amos, when Shmuel says that Beishamay followed what they preached, at what point in history was that? And the Gemara introduces an incident that you find in a few Masechtas throughout the Shas. There was a heavenly voice that came forth and announced that the halacha shall follow the opinion of Beis Hillel. And we'll say that in general, the halacha should follow the opinion of Beis Hillel. So we're asking here, according to Shmuel, that Beis Shammai followed their own opinion. They, in terms of practice, when was this? If you say that this was before the heavenly voice that announced the halacha shall follow Beis Hillel, my time of the Mandam or Lo Asu, what would the reason be for Rav to claim that they didn't follow their own teachings? The Elo, the Achar Baskol. So are you going to say that the Machlokas Rav and Shmuel is after the heavenly voice came forth? My time of the Mandam or Asu. So how do you explain Shmuel, if the heavenly voice announced that the halacha shall follow Beis Hillel, why would the students of Beis Shammai follow a practice contrary to the heavenly voice? The Gemara responds. You'll see two responses. Iboy Esemo Kedem Basko, Iboy Esemo Leachar Basko. Two responses regarding time. When did this machlokas Rav and Shmuel, at what point in time was it? So you have one says it was before the heavenly voice, and one says after the heavenly voice. There are those that say, in other words, you can say that it was before the heavenly voice, and if that's the case, we have to explain then why would someone say that they did not follow their own teaching. So ukigon de Beis Hillel ruba. And we'll make we'll lay down the assumption that Beis Hillel was the majority. And now the Gemara explains the two opinions. L'madom or lo asu, according to the opinion that even though we are pre-Baskol, but still Beis Shammai would not follow their own practice, toha Beis Hillel ruba, the community of Beis Hillel were the majority. So you follow the majority, hence the students of Beis Shammai realized they were the minority, so they didn't practice what they preached. Umadam are also those that say that the Beis Shammai practiced what they preached, and now Beis Hillel though was the majority, so how do you explain their Beis Shammai's behavior? Ki azlinon basaruba, they will tell you that when does one follow the majority? Hecha dechi hadodi ninu. That's when, in terms of their learning capacity or learning level, they are equal, and the deciding factor will be numbers, the majority. Hocha, though here, Beis Shammai mechadadi tvei. Beis Shammai were sharper, so their sharpness compensated for their lack of numbers. Not only did it compensate, but it gave them, according to this opinion, the advantage. So that even though they were the minority, but they were sharper, they were more more astute, more talented in their learning powers and capabilities. And therefore, they practiced what they felt to be the halacha, even though they were the minority. Another approach to the machlokis Rav and Shmuel is after the heavenly voice announced that the halacha shall follow Beis Hillel. Mandomar lo asu, the opinion that says that like Rav, that Beis Shammai did not follow their own teaching, the whole nafka baskel, because the heavenly voice announced that the halacha shall follow Beis Hillel. Umandomar asu, Rabbi Yeshua hi, the opinion that says that, namely Shmuel's opinion, that Beis Shammai followed their teaching, even though the heavenly voice said that the halacha shall follow Beis Hillel. This approach is the approach of the Tana Rabbi Yeshua, the Omar Ein Mashgichin Bebaskol. He holds that one does not heed the heavenly voice. There's a concept of that once the Torah was given, the heavenly intervention is of no consequence to Torah-related decisions. The Gemara now continues with the issue that we introduced before. Umandomar Osu, according to the opinion that Beis Shammai followed their own teachings, is there not a problem? Karinon Kan Loisis Godulos Sasu Agudos Agudos. This is essentially Reish Lakish's question from the beginning of the Gemara. And that is, Losis Godulu teaches me, do not make groups and groups. In other words, one group doing this way and one group doing that way. So how are we to explain the behavior of Beis Shammai following their own practice in light of the fact that Beis Hillel had their ruling? And by having this machlokis continue in a practical onto the practical mode, you're creating the impression that there are two Torahs. Omar Abaye. And here we have a new marking on the side under the Nosei Mivneh heading. Take note of the bow tie. Shnei Tshuvos LaSheila, two answers to the question. L'madomet Beishama Oskei Divrehem, according to the opinion that we saw before, Shmuel, for example, that Beishamai followed their teaching, creating a separate track. Is there not the objection of having groups, separate groups, disparate groups in terms of halachic practice? So Abaye answers, Omar Abaye, ki amrino loisis godudu, when is it that we say that there's a prohibition of making separate groups? Kagon shtei botei dinim beir achas halolu moirim kedivrei Beis Shammai v'halolu moirim kedivrei Beis Hillel. That's only when you have two courts that render decisions in one city, in the same city, with one court ruling like Beis Shammai and one court ruling like Beis Hillel. Avol shtei botei dinim b'shtei ayoros les lon ba. Having two separate courts in two separate cities, that does not present a problem of loy siskoidudu. So according to this approach, loy siskoidudu, the concept of factionalized Jewish practice, is a problem only within the same locale. Omar le rava, v'ho beisham beisilo, kishtei bote dinim, bir achas domi. But isn't the very existence of the two schools of Torah, Beis Shammai, the Yeshiva of Shammai, and Beis Hillel, isn't that like two courts within one city? And they argued, and that doesn't seem to be a problem. Elo Omar Rava, ki Amrina Loisis Godus, Rava comes up with his approach. When is there a problem of factionalizing? Kigon Beis Din Beirachas, a court in one city, plag murin kedivrei Beis Shammai, plag murin kedivrei Beis Hillel, where half the court rules like Beis Shammai and the other half rules like Beis Hillel. Aval shtei botei dinem biir achas les lon ba, but two separate courts, two separate schools of thought, two separate courts in one city, even though they're in one city, that does not pose a problem. As we go on, you can see a new marking, the volcano or trapezoid shape on the side. We explain, Nisyonis Lahakshus al Tshuvasa Shel Rava, attempts to question Rava's answer. So, just to review, Rava holds that the problem of Loisis Gwededu is a split within one court, but two separate courts in one city does not present a problem. So now let's evaluate that. Toshma b'makomish Rabbi Lezer hoyu korsum eitzin lasos pchomim b'shabbos lasos barzel. In the town of Rabbi Eliezer, we know that the mitzvah of bris milah supersedes Shabbos. The actual cutting of the foreskin, even though it involves a molocha, something that otherwise would be a Shabbos violation, but since it's in the context of fulfilling bris milah, circumcision, on the eighth day of the child's life, if the eighth day is Shabbos, the Torah allows that. Rabbi Eliezer went one step further. He said even preparatory matters for the circumcision are allowed. So that if you, let us say, they didn't have a knife and they needed to heat up iron to fashion a knife, he would allow the cutting of trees to provide fuel for a fire to create coals for the purpose of fashioning the barzel, the iron, to make a knife. So you can even make the knife on Shabbos. B'mkomo shel, that's Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. Of course, not everyone agrees with that. Rabbi Eliezer represents the shita that machshirei mitzvah are also doicha Shabbos. The preparatory stages for mitzvahs that supersede Shabbos, even the preparatory stages are capable of superseding Shabbos. B'mkomo shel Rabbi Yossi aglili hoyo oichlem besar oif b'cholov. In the community of Rabbi Yossi Glili, they practiced eating not meat and milk, but chicken or fowl, both for birds. The most common bird that we consume today would probably be chicken. So we'll say chicken and milk. They would cook chicken and milk together, just like people might cook fish and milk together. They viewed chicken and milk as being acceptable, not a problem of meat and milk. That's in Rabbi Yossi Haglili's community. Now, the Gemara emphasizes, b'mekoymo Rabbi Lezer in, b'mekoymo Rabbi Kiva lo, in the community of Rabbi Lezer, they would fashion knives, if necessary, on Shabbos for circumcision, but not in Rabbi Akiva's town, desanya kla loma Rabbi Akiva, kol locha shef shalasa yisamer of Shabbos. Rabbi Akiva presents a rule that any activity that could have been done on Friday, ein doicha esa Shabbos, that does not supersede Shabbos. Now, the actual circumcision couldn't have been done on Friday. That would have been too early. The Torah mandates that circumcision is on the eighth day of the child's life, not the seventh day. However, the knife could have been fashioned erev Shabbos on Friday, namely before Shabbos. So Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion, contrary to that of Rabbi Eliezer, that you're not allowed to make the knife on Shabbos. So this is presented as a challenge to Rava. In other words, you see two practices. Rabbi Eliezer is saying it's allowed. Rabbi Akiva is saying it's not allowed. The Gemara asks, "V'hai mai tufto? How is this a problem to begin with for Rava's answer? Mekomos shiny. They're two different places. Rava said that if you're in two separate courts, even in the same town, it's okay. Certainly, if you're two separate cities, there is no problem of loy sisko to do. So what is the intention of bringing this toshma, this what we have noted as the trapezoid shape? What was the intention of the Gemara even bringing this in the first place? Udakari law, my kari law. That is the question of the Gemara. What was the intention? What was the havamina of raising this as an objection to begin with? So the Gemara answers. Salka daita chamina. I would have thought mishum chumra de Shabbos kemokoim echod domi, because of the severe nature, of Shabbos, the chumrah, the severity of Shabbos, the importance and severity of Shabbos, it creates a situation where all places are considered like one place. And if that were the case, so that you're in one place and you have Rabbi Elazar going this way and Rabbi Akiva going that way, and we seem to accept that, and that would have been a challenge to Rava. Kamash Malan, so what the Gemara answered is that we're not viewing them as such. That in fact, even though Shabbos might be very severe, nevertheless they are, Rabbi Elazar represents one community, and Rabbi Akiva represents a separate community. And therefore there's no problem of Lois is going to do. The Gemara continues, Toshma, the Rebbe Avo, a story, this is not, it's a proof brought from an incident, but it's not a Tanaic source. The Rebbe Avo, ki iklo, the Asrei, the Rebbe Yeshua ben Levi. Rebbe Avo, when he would visit Rebbe Yeshua ben Levi's town, have a mitalta shroga. This is, again, Hilchus Shabbos, if one has, let us say, a candelabra, and the candelabra has gone out. In other words, it was lit before Shabbos in the proper fashion, and in the course of Shabbos, after a few hours went by, the fuel was used up, and it's now extinguished. That's the case of the shroga. Metalta shroga means that Rabbi Avo, when he would visit Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's town, he would move around the extinguished candelabra. This touches on the general topic of muktzah, the items that one is not allowed or one is allowed to move around on Shabbos. So he viewed this as a non-muktzah problem. In other words, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi subscribes to the Tanaic approach of Rabbi Shimon that doesn't hold from the muktzah restriction. The chi ikla li asrei de Rabbi Yochanan, and when Rabbi Avo would visit Rabbi Yochanan's town, lo have him etatel shroga. Rabbi Yochanan was sensitive to Rabbi Yehuda's approach, who argues with the Tana Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda holds from the muktzah restriction, so that once the Shabbos enters and you cannot move the candelabra, even after it goes out, you still cannot move it. That's a classic example of muktzah. So Rabbi Avo, when he was in Rabbi Yochanan's town, he would not move around the extinguished candelabra. So do we not see from here that it's that we're challenging Rava? Here we have two separate practices by the same person, and he's behaving that way. Rava would have said that it's not acceptable. The Gemara asks, "V'hai my kusha? What is the problem here to begin with?" For lo amrino, did we not say mekoymos mekoymos shiny? That different, once you're in two different places, so that is a legitimatizing factor. In other words, los is go to do factionalized practice is a problem, but when you're in the same locale, even more specifically, we're in the same court, but when you're in two separate locales, there's no problem. And is this not a case of two separate locales? So there is no question. The Gemara asks, Anan Hochi Kormunan. Our question is, and it was in bringing in Rabbi Avo, our question is, Rabbi Avo, Hechi Ovid Hocha Hochi, Vehechi Ovid Hocha Hochi. What kind of Judaism is this, that when you're in one place, you practice one way, and when you're in another place, you practice another way? You know, it's the one person picking and choosing how to practice his Judaism depending on where he is. Who ever heard of such a thing? The Gemara explains, Rabbi Avo, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Svirale. Rabbi Avo, in principle, holds, like Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, that is lenient, that you're allowed to move the candelabra after it's gone out. And when he was visiting Rabbi Yochanan's locale, out of respect to Rabbi Yochanan, he would not move the candelabra. The candle after it was extinguished, that was because that was Rabbi Yochanan's
restriction. So out of honor to him, he too behaved in this restricted fashion. The Gemara asks, "Vayikra Shama?" Is there not a problem though of Rabbi Avo's servant? That Rabbi Avo's servant, he knows his master's opinion, and his master's opinion, you're allowed to move it around. So is he not going to move it around even in Rabbi Yochanan's locale? Rashi says, "Vayikra Shama the Rabbi Avo." Shama is the servant of Rabbi Avo. To lo masika daite, it won't occur to him. Umetalteo be asre the Rabbi Yochanan. Hoyo v'chazi Rabbi Avo be alma the metalteo. Since he sees Rabbi Avo in general moving it around, he'll continue moving it around even in Rabbi Yochanan's locale. The Gemara says that's not something to worry about. The moda le l'shama. Rabbi Avo would be diligent enough in informing, the moda is informing the shamash, hey, we're now in Rabbi Yochanan's town, don't move around the extinguished candelabra. As you can see, we have now reached the end of the bracketed section, and in order to appreciate the structure of the Gemara, one would go back to the Gemara just before the brackets, where we saw Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish arguing, did Beis Shammai actually practice what they preached? Reish Lakish claiming, because of my concern of Lois is going to do, they certainly would not have practiced what they preached. And when it came to the case of Tzoras Erva, they would not allow the co-wife of the forbidden woman to marry the surviving brother. And Rabbi Yochanan says that's not so. They did practice what they preached, and it, within the Beis Shammai community, if the brother died, left one of two wives that was forbidden, the co-wife would enter the Yibum marriage with the surviving brother. Again, emphasis on co-wife. The Gemara now involves itself with trying to determine which approach is more acceptable. Toshma, we bring a source, and note the structure. Once again, I know sometimes we sound a bit repetitive, but in the interest of not losing sight of the forest for the trees, do note the numbering scheme. Take a look down the left-hand side of the Gemara text, you see a number 1 here on Omid Beis. If you have Omid Beis available, you see 2 and 3. 3 you find at the lower part of the page. And you go to Daf Tes Vav Amud Aleph, if you have that available. You'll notice that we have numbered there up until 8. And Tes Vav Amud Beis, there's 9 and 10. And that basically takes us to Tes Zayin Amud Aleph. You see a number 11. So now we continue with the Gemara. Toshma, afalpi she'elu oisrim ve'elu matirin. Even though the Beis Hillel community prohibited the Tzoras Erva, co-wife of forbidden woman, to enter Yibum, the Elu Matirin Beis Shammai allowed, lo nimnu Beis Shammai lisa noshim mi Beis Hillel v'lo Beis Hillel mi Beis Shammai. The different groups, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, did not withhold themselves, nimnu limonaz, to resist or to withhold yourself. They did not withhold themselves from marrying women from one another. Iamris bishlamo loy osu. If you say that in the Beis Shammai community they did not practice yibum with a tzoras erva, mishum hochi lo nimnu. Therefore, everyone basically was of the same opinion. The same practice, and no Tzoras Erva Yibum marriages took place. So there's no problem of the people that were born, the children that were born from marriages within the different communities. Elo I Amris Osu, But if you say that they practiced what they preached, amai loininu, why did they not withhold themselves? There's room to raise, we'll say, doubt and suspicion. And the Gemara spells this out. Bishlamo beishamai mi beishilo loy nimnu. Tebenei chayve lavin ninhu. So here we have to work this out. I can understand, the Gemara says, that Beishamai did not resist taking women in marriage from the Beis Hillel practice. So let's go over what was the Beis Hillel practice. According to Beis Hillel, a Tzoras Erva would not do Yibum whatsoever, not Yibum, not Chalitza. What happened? So the Tzoras Erva, the co-wife, was free to marry whomever she wanted. So you were, according to Beis Hillel, the woman was free to marry. Now, in the mindset of Beis Shammai, what is Beis Hillel doing? In the mindset of Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel is releasing a woman that should have done Yibum. That's called Yevama Lashuk. The outsider who marries a Yevama Lashuk, a woman who is otherwise bound to Yibum, the outsider who marries her is in violation of a negative command. Lo si'eshes hameis hachutza lishzar. So the outsider that marries this woman is in violation of a negative command. The children that result are called b'nei chayve lavin, the children of parents who violated a negative command. Even though the parents violated a negative command, that doesn't impinge upon or ruin the marital status or the genealogical status of the individual. True, parents didn't do the right thing, but that doesn't affect their legitimacy status. They're considered legitimate people, legitimate children, and hence they are able to enter the Jewish community in marriage. So as far as Beis Shammai's acceptance of people from the Beis Hillel community, even in the, we'll call the worst case scenario, that a person from Beis Shammai meets a mate from Beis Hillel, and the parents of that mate were a man who married someone who was a Tzoras Erva, but he wasn't the surviving brother. Okay, so that man violated a negative command. The child that results is considered of acceptable genealogical status and not a problem of mamzerus, of illegitimacy. Elo Beis Hillel, mi Beis Shammai. If you're going to say that they did not practice what they preached. Correction. If you're going to say that they practiced what they preached, how could it be that the Beis Hillel people would accept people from Beis Shammai? What was Beis Shammai's practice? They allowed the Tzoras Erva to marry the surviving brother. But in the eyes of Beis Hillel, that was a high-level violation of marital law. As far as Beis Hillel is concerned, Beis Shammai was allowing a brother-in-law to marry his sister-in-law outside the realm of Yibum, because in the eyes of Beis Hillel, when you're dealing with a Tzoras Erva, there is no mitzvah Yibum. So what are you left with if there's no mitzvah Yibum? It's basically a brother-in-law marrying a sister-in-law. That is a kores violation, and the result of a kores violation would produce children that we call mamzerim, and mamzerim are forbidden to marry into the Jewish community. So let's read this again in the words of the Gemara. Elo Beis Hillel mi Beis Shammai amai loy nimnu. Why would Beis Hillel not resist taking as a mate someone from Beis Shammai? B'nei chayvei krisus mamzerim ninhu. V'chitema, you might want to say, Kosavri Beis Hillel D'ein Mamzer Mechaive Krisus, that Mamzerus does not result from the union of male and female where there's a Kores penalty. And if that would be the case, so we could continue arguing or maintaining that each one did as they practiced as they preached, and understand how they didn't resist marrying from one another. But this isn't true. This isn't accurate. The Ha'omar Rebbe Lozer, Afal Pi Shenechluku Beis Shammai Ubeis Hillel B'Tzoros, even though they argue concerning the rule of Tzoros Erva, Moidim, they concede She'ein Mamzer Elo Mimi She'isuro Isur Erva V'Onush Koreis, regarding the classification or Nitunim, necessary elements for creating Mamzerus, there is no argument, and it comes about when you have Erva, a woman who's forbidden by virtue of her, let's say, her family status, and she carries with her an Onush Kores, where intimacy with her would be a Kores level violation. So to suggest that Beis Hillel holds that Mamzerus doesn't come about through a Chiyuv Kores is simply not accurate. There is a Mamzerus problem. So how could it be that the people from Beis Hillel would accept a mate from Beis Shammai? Elo lav shmamino lo asu. So we must conclude that Beis Shammai didn't practice what they maintained. True, on the books, Tzoras Erva is allowed in Yibum, but practically speaking, they didn't go through with that. And since they didn't go through with that, so there was no Mamzerus created in the families of Beis Shammai, in the eyes, of course, of Beis Hillel. Lo, here the inverted triangle indicates a rejection of this conclusion. Li'olam Osu, we will tell you that Beis Shammai allowed the Tzoras Erva to enter a Yibum relationship. And if you'll ask, then how is it that Beis Hillel would marry children from the Beis Shammai school of thought, from those families? De modei lehu uparshi. If a suggested mate that had this background to them, in other words, that the candidate for marriage happened to be a result from a union of a sister-in-law, brother-in-law, Tzoras Erva situation, so the Beis Shammai people would inform Beis Hillel as such, Uparshi, and then they would discontinue that relationship, but they wouldn't get married. Notice that we're starting here a long rejection, and that's indicated with the Dalid, if you see to the right-hand side of your Gemara text. And the Gemara continues that this is probably what actually happened, this idea of informing them. The Kotoni Seifa, the continuation of the source says, Kol Hataros v'chol timeos shehoyu elu mitarin v'elu mitamin, in the realm of ritual purity, taros and timeos, and defilement, it should be noted that Beis Hillel had a more restrictive, a more machmir approach. So even though we, each group, had their own standards, and the Beis Hillel had a more rigid standard when it comes to this area of ritual defilement, lo nimnu oisim taros elu al gabi elu. They wouldn't resist borrowing vessels from one another. The Gemara continues at the top of Amud Beis. E amers bishlamah de modi lehu. If you accept the answer we gave before,
that each side practiced their own opinion, but if there was ever a matter of question to the other side, so one side would inform the other ahead of time. So mishum hachi lo nimnu, so that in the realm of taharos and tameos, there was no resistance, and one would borrow vessels from the other. And very simply, if there was anything that was questionable, let us say in the eyes of Beis Hillel, regarding something coming from Beis Shammai, so the people from Beis Shammai would say, you know, this vessel encountered this and this situation, and which you consider to be Tomei, so you're not going to want to borrow this vessel from us. So if there would be no warning ahead of time, no information shared ahead of time, that's a sign that the matter or the item in question is not questionable, it's accepted by the other side. Elo yamris de lo modi lahu, if you say, however, that there wasn't this practice of informing one another, so bishlama beishambes hilo lo nimnu, I can understand the direction of Beis Shammai taking from Beis Hillel, they didn't resist. The Tameos, the Beis Hillel, the Beis Shammai Taharos Ninu. As we said before, that Beis Hillel had a higher standard in this realm. So that which Beis Hillel considered Tomei, Beis Shammai considered Tahor. So the Beis Shammai was never at any risk in taking and borrowing something from Beis Hillel. Elo Beis Hillel mi Beis Shammai lomo lo nimnu. But the other way around, why would Beis Hillel not withhold themselves, not resist taking things from Beis Shammai? After all, taharois de Beis Shammai the Beis Hillel tameas dinu. That which Beis Shammai would consider ritually clean, ritually pure, is considered in the eyes of Beis Hillel defiled. So how could Beis Hillel allow themselves to borrow vessels from Beis Shammai if there was no agreement of prior information? Elo lav de modi lahu. Rather, it must be that there was sharing of information ahead of time if anything of a questionable nature arose. Shmamino, so this is conclusive. So in order to prove the point of modi lahu, namely, informing ahead of time if anything questionable arose, the Gemara felt that this is clear from the example of the Tumas and Taros, from the issue of the defilement and ritual purity. The Gemara asks, Umay ulme dehach mehach. Ume means stronger. What is stronger about the proof from the borrowing of vessels to prove the point of modi lahu more so than the case of tsaros, the case of the tsaros erva, where if you want to claim that modi lahu, there would be any information that would be shared ahead of time, so that was clear from the case of the fact that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel families married from one another, and more specifically that Beis Hillel would marry people from Beis Shammai. And even though the practices of Beis Shammai in the eyes of Beis Hillel could have led to mamzerus, if such a problem actually existed, so the members of Beis Shammai would tell the people from Beis Hillel ahead of time. So isn't that clear from the case of the Tsaros? Why did the Gemara have to cite the case of the Taros and the Tmeos in order to illustrate this idea of Modi Lahu? That's what the Gemara is asking right now, and we'll read the words again. Umay ume dahach meach. What is stronger, what's more convincing concerning the case of the vessels and Tumas and Taros from the more so than the case of the Tsaros? The Gemara explains, Mahu detemo Tsara kola is law. One might have thought that in the case of the Tsara, the reason Beis Hillel would marry from Beis Shammai was even without any prior warning, because if there was any question, it would have been well known. Kola means literally a voice or a sound would have been produced. In other words, people would have spoken about it. So that you don't see from that case
necessarily that there was a practice of announcing or informing one of the other. People would have relied on the koil. Komash Malon, you see more clearly from the case of the borrowing of vessels from one another, and again, more specifically, Beis Hillel's borrowing of vessels from Beis Shammai, even though the Beis Shammai standard was a lower standard, Beis Hillel nevertheless borrowed from them. Based on what? Based on this idea that if there was any problem, so the Beis Shammai people have the lower standard, would have informed the people of Beis Hillel that this and this vessel is not something for you to borrow. So we see this idea of Modilu more clearly in the case of the Tumas and Taros. Now, as you can see, we have a bracketed section. After the brackets, a crown appears. Of course, it's an inverted crown, but it goes back to touch on the topic of whether Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, specifically did Beis Shammai practice what they preached. There's a starred note that says what we just pointed out, and let's read the starred note. Li'achar ha'sogram gemara tamshich levarer im osu Beis Shammai oiloi osu kedivrem. After the brackets, the Gemara will continue the investigation as to whether Beis Shammai actually practiced like they preached. Besocha sograyim haGemara mevareres lemi mechuvon hamoidim shebesoich hamokar. The word modim, they agree, they conceded to. To whom does this apply? So now the Gemara, Gufa. Gufa represents a quote from that which we had mentioned before. Omar Rabbi Elazar, Afal pi shenechlu Beis Shammai Hillel b'tzaros, even though Beis Shammai Hillel had argued concerning the matter of tzaros erva, can the co-wife of the prohibited woman marry the surviving brother? Moidim she'ein mamzer elamisha isuro isur erva v'onush kores. We dashed underline the word that is now going to be subject to analysis, the Gemara's man moidim. Gemara on the side, I should say our comment on the side, we have a tatnose. This is a subtopic. Me'ezo kishrei isur notzar mamzerus. From which kind of forbidden relations does mamzerus come about? And the mivneh indicates a shlavim, stages levar man moidim. We're trying to figure out who is conceding to whom. So the Gemara continues. Man moidim. In lema Beis Shammai leBeis Hillel, if it's Beis Shammai conceding to Beis Hillel that there's no mamzerus other than through Iser Erva, which is Kores, so Pshita, it's obvious, B'nei Chayvei Lavin Ksherim Ninhu, the children that result from a union that would be considered a mere negative violation, and what would that be in our case? That would be a case of a Yevoma Vashuk, marrying an outsider. A Yevoma Vashuk, that means a woman that was bound to do Yibum, and we should point out, in the case of Tzoras Erva, as far as Beis Shammai is concerned, she was subject to the mitzvah of Yibum. But if she marries outside, she doesn't marry the surviving brother, so she is considered a chiyuv lav, a yevoma l'shuk. Well, it's as far as the halacha is concerned, a child that results from a union of two people that are forbidden to one another based on a negative command, the child is kosher. That's not a mamzer. So it's clear, it's simple, that Beis Shammai concedes to Beis Hillel that there's no mamzerus from what we were describing, because all Beis Shammai was describing was the situation of a tzoras erva not complying with what they expected, and rather marrying Lashuk. That's a chiyuv lav. Elo Beis Hillel le Beis Shammai. So rather, Moedim would be Beis Hillel to Beis Shammai. The Gemara says, that's not likely. He gufa chayve krisus he. The subject at issue, the case of the Tzoras Erva, is itself an example of chay of chiv krisus. The language of this source indicates that they concede to the case of Mamzeres only in a case of Chiyuv Kores, indicating that which they're discussing right now is not a Chiyuv Kores. But that's not true. He Gufa means the case of the Tzoras Erva in the eyes of Beis Hillel is an Achois, is an Eishes Ach Sheloi B'Mokum Mitzvah. She's a brother's wife in a situation where there's no Mitzvahs Yibum. So she herself is an example of Chiyuv Krisus. So what would it mean that Beis Hillel is conceding? It's that only in those cases where there's a Chiyuv Kores does it result in Mamzeres. This itself is a case of Chiyuv Kores. Namely, the Tzoras Erva entering a Yibum relationship. Liolam Beis Shammai LeBeis Hillel. What the source is telling us is that Beis Shammai is conceding to Beis Hillel, and we said that, well, that's obvious, that all Beis Shammai was describing was a case of a Yevoma Lashuk. Yevoma Lashuk is a Chiyuv Lav, and that wouldn't predate Mamzerus, so what do I have to tell of something that is so obvious? Ulafuke Midi Rabbi Akiva. And the point is that we're informing us that we are to the exclusion of the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Diomar Yesh Mamzer Mechayve Lavin. According to Rabbi Akiva, Mamzerus could result even from a case of a Lav level violation. Kamashmlan, this source is telling us the Ein Mamzer Mechayve Lavin. That even Beis Shammai concedes that Mamzerus' illegitimacy does not result from a Lav violation, but rather only from a Chiyuv Kores Erva relationship. Ta Shma. We're number two, and you can see the inverted crown shape with the colored in tips, indicating that we're going to try to show that they, in fact, did practice what they preached. Each side did what they did. And by the end of this discussion, this will appear to stick. So let's see. Toshma, afalpi shenechliku Beis Shammai uBeis Hillel, even though Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argued over a number of topics. Now, in the course of our Daf Yomi Gemara Markings Shir, we're not going to explain each one of these topics. They represent quite involved topics in and of themselves. The main point is going to follow the list of topics. So we continue in the source, even though Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argue Betzoros, that's the topic that we're familiar with right now, the issue of Tzoros Erva, Huba Achoyos, matters regarding sisters, Beget Yoshan, an issue concerning a divorce document that may or may not still be binding or valid, Ubesofik Eishes Ish, Uve Megarishes Ishto Volona Imoi Bepunduk, and number six, Bekesef, Ubeshovekesef, Bepruta, Beshovapruta. Even though they have arguments concerning these topics, and all of these topics are connected to matters of marriage and subsequent legitimacy of children. Loi nimnu Beis Shammai mi liso noshim mi Beis Hillel velo Beis Hillel mi Beis Shammai. They did not abstain from marrying women from one another. Lelamdecha, to teach us, shechiba v'reus noyagim ze boze, that there was affinity and friendship that was observed by each group. Beishami Beis Hillel, Lekayim Mashenemar, and fulfillment of the Pasuk, Ho'emes V'Hasholom Ahevu. Truth and peace coexist. Rabbi Shimon Oimer, Nimnu Hein Min Havadai, V'lo Nimnu Min Hasofek. They did abstain from something that was of a certain nature, but they did not abstain from that which was of a doubtful nature. E Amris Bishlama Osu, if you say that both sides practiced what they preached, Mishum Hochi Nimnu, as a result of that, that which Reb Shimon just pointed out, can be understood that they abstained from marrying one another when the situation was of a certain nature. The questionable situation was of a certain nature. Questionable meaning the point that was the subject of their controversy was known. Eloi Amris Loi Osu, if you say that they did not actually practice what they preached, Amai Nimnu, why was there any abstaining? So at this point, the Gemara feels this is conclusive, that by virtue of the fact that when there was a known problem, they would abstain from marrying one another, this shows that they practiced what they preached. The Gemara asks a question. V'tisbara, this needs clarification. He nami da'asu, granted that, as you claim, each side practiced what they preached, Bishlamo Beis Hillel Nimnu mi Beis Shammai, I can understand Beis Hillel abstaining from marrying from Beis Shammai, the Chayvei Krisus Ninu Umamzerim Heim LeBeis Hillel. The practice of Beis Shammai in the eyes of Beis Hillel would lead to Mamzerus, and hence Beis Hillel would not marry from Beis Shammai. Elo Beis Shammai Amai Nimnu mi Beis Hillel, why would the people from Beis Shammai abstain from marriages with people from Beis Hillel? After all, what did Beis Hillel say? Beis Hillel said that the Tzora should go Lashuk. In the eyes of Beis Shammai, that would have been the worst case scenario, that instead of the Tzora doing what Beis Shammai felt she should do, and that is marry the surviving brother, no, the Beis Hillel people would have sent her out to marry someone else. But as far as Beis Shammai is concerned, B'nei Chayvei Lavin Ninhu Uksherim Ninhu. According to Beis Shammai, that would have been what we call a Yevama Lashuk. We described this before. And the children of a Yevama Lashuk, the children of a woman who was designated to marry the surviving brother and did not, but rather married an outsider, the children would be the children of a Chiyuv Lav relationship. And they are kosher. So why would Beis Shammai not marry children from the Beis Hillel community? The Gemara responds, as far as this particular question is concerned, we have an answer for that. Kidomer of Nachum Bar Yitzchok, as he says later on, Daftes Vavamid Aleph, Lo Nitzrucha Elo Litzora Atzma, this particular teaching is not with regard to the children of relationships, but rather it's reference to the co-wife herself. Hochanami lo nitzrucho elo litzora atzmo. That which Reb Shimon taught, nimnu, that means that Beis Shammai would resist, would abstain from marrying Beis Hillel, is a reference to the Beis Shammai people would abstain from marrying the Yevoma Lashuk, from marrying the Tzora, the co-wife that was sent out by Beis Hillel to marry someone else. So that woman herself, we're not talking about her children, we're talking about the woman herself, Beis Shammai would not marry her until she participated in the Chalitza ceremony. The Gemara, but again, structurally, notice what happened. We brought the inverted crown marking, and we brought that in to show that things would be smoother better understood if you say that each side, specifically Beis Shammai, practiced what they preached. The Gemara tried to question that approach, and the Gemara just answered it. So we're left with the conclusion, like the inverted triangle, the inverted crown marking suggested, and the conclusion being that each side, Beis Shammai, still practiced what they preached. The Gemara asks, and here we have an arrow, you can use it to find where this was mentioned earlier. Umay shno min havadai de isurahu. Why, according to Reb Shimon, what is the distinction between something that is, we'll say, the known problem, that represents a problem, something forbidden to the other side? Sofek nami isurahu. On that line, it said that they did not abstain from matters that were sofek. Now, the thinking right now is, as Rashi explains, min ha-sofek, kosake dait dechashto bi-isur sofek, kagon megoresh v'lonim obapundiki, deleka le-sofek, deshem abole le-shem kiddushin. Matters that are doubtful. There, the case involved someone who had divorced his wife, and then was seen to have spent an evening with her in a pundiki, in a motel. And there, if he spent the night with her, it could be that they had relations that would have, in effect, been a remarriage. It's a bila l'shem kiddushin. It's unknown. That's a case that's unknown. But is that not a problem? Is there not an issue here of something that is a doubtful problem as far as her status is concerned? So why does Reb Shimon claim that they would abstain only from cases of known problems and not cases of doubtful problems? The Gemara answers, Lo tema min ha-sofek. Don't say that they did not abstain from matters of doubt. Elo emo min ha-stam. When did they not abstain? From something that was not spoken about, something that was unqualified, which means, as Rashi says, min hastam, kol kama de lo modi lehu, as long as there was silence about the party, lo hoyu parshi nistama, they didn't abstain from one another, or separate from one another, just on the stam circumstance. It's very clear that if there was any problem, if the candidate for marriage came from an area where there was some issue, so they would have informed the other side, so that when Reb Shimon above described as lo nimnu ha-sofek, it means they didn't resist under circumstances that nothing was spoken about. Ela ema, reading this line again in the Gemara, ela ema min ha-stam. They didn't abstain from cases that were stam. There was no prior speech or prior information shared. De modi lehu parshi, that if there was any real problem, even if there was any problem of doubt, information would have been shared, would have been spoken about. And as long as nothing was said, so we say mistama mutar. Umay komashmolan, what is the point of this teaching? Namely that in matters of doubt, they didn't abstain from matters of doubt, meaning in nothing was spoken about, when it was stam, so there was no resistance of marrying one another. What's the point? Is the point the avo v'reus noyagim zebozeh, that they practiced affinity and respect to one another? Hainu reisha. That's what the Tanakhama also says. The Gemara says, Ha komash malon de kula Rabbi Shimon hi. The point here is to tell us that really the whole source is authored by Rabbi Shimon. In other words, the appearance of Rabbi Shimon at the end that says, Lo nimna sofek, simply casts light on the entire source as being authored by Rabbi Shimon. Toshma. Again, we see the inverted crown shape, which, as we said earlier, is an attempt on the part of the Gemara to demonstrate that each side practiced what they preached. However, we didn't color in the tips, so the Gemara will challenge this, and it'll be, a successful challenge. On the side of the Gemara, we have a tatnasi, a subtopic, Ritzonus Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, the Sakin Chalitza Litzor Serva. There's an attempt on the part of Rabbi Yochanan to establish that whenever there was a Tzoras Erva, co-wife of a forbidden woman, that falls into a Yibum scenario, that we should automatically prescribe the Chalitza ceremony. Toshma, the Omer Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, Heich Halocha Zu Rovachas B'Yisrael. How could it be that this situation is present, is manifest throughout Israel? If we were to follow Beis Shammai and allow Tzoras Erva to do Yibum, the result would be Mamzerus, would be illegitimacy in the eyes of Beis Hillel. Nase Kedivrei Beis Hillel, if we were to allow the Tzoras Erva to marry Lashuk, as Beis Hillel says, Havlad Pogum Ledivrei Beis Shammai, the offspring, even though he's not a Mamzer, he's considered defective on a spiritual, legal level, not physically defective, but as Rashi says, Havlad Pogum Ledivrei Beis Shammai Diim Hoya Kain, if he was a Kain Posilakuna, he wouldn't be able to serve as a Kain. Vafagav de Bnei Chave Lavin Sherim Lakal Chalom Him Linyan Kuna, even though they're fit to marry into the public, the children of parents who violated a negative command, if they happen to be Kehanim, they would be rendered unfit to serve as Kehanim. This point of information is derived through what we know concerning the child of a widow that mates with a Kohen Gadol. Now we turn back to the Gemara. As Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri is expressing his exasperation for the, we'll call it the unchecked situation, that if we if we follow Beis Hillel, namely to free the Tzoras Erva and let her marry Lashuk, but Havlad Pogum Ledivrei Beis Shammai, the child is considered defective with regard to the Kehuna according to Beis Shammai. Bo Unesakein Lohen Letzoras. So here Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri announces, let us establish for the Tzoras, for the co-wife of an Erva, we continue at the top of that test above, Shiu Cholsos Veloi Nisyavnos. That is, rule of thumb, every Tzoras Erva, when she becomes a widow, she should participate in the shoe removal ceremony, thereby allowing her to marry Lashuk, allowing her to marry an outsider, according to all opinions. Lo hispiku ligmos hadavar, however, they didn't have a chance to accept, to rule upon Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's suggestion, ad shenitrufa hasha, until the time passed. In other words, there was might have been some type of pogrom that took place at that moment, and they never actually established this as practice. Amale Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, ma nase lohem letzoros harishonos me'ata? We take a look at Rashi at the top. Ma nase letzoros harishonos shenisyabnu uvnei mamzerim im nigmor halocha shelo yisyabnu? If we are to follow Rav Yochanan ben Nuri and institutionalize chalitza for Tzoras Erva, what is that going to leave us to conclude regarding the earlier Tzoras Erva that married? Are you going to say that they married and produced children that were mamzerim? E amers bishlamo asu, if you say that each side practiced what they preached, hainu de ka'omar ma naase, then I can understand Rav Shimon ben Gamliel's, we'll say, frustration as we saw through the Rashi, what are we going to do now with those Tzoros that did marry? Indicating that, in fact, the Tzoros ever married the surviving brother, indicating, like we are trying to show, that Beis Shammai practiced what they preached. Eloi Amris lo asu, but if you say that Beis Shammai never actually had Tzoros ever marrying the Yavam, my ma naase. What is Reb Shimon Liel trying to explain when he says, what are we going to do with the Tzoros Rishonos? There's nothing to worry about to begin with. The Tzoros Rishonos, the Tzoros Erva never married their surviving, or the surviving brother. So from the fact that Shmuel Leo reacts the way he does, what are we going to do now with the first Tzoros? That shows us that the Beis Shammai people actually followed what they preached. And the inverted triangle indicates a rejection. Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Loi Nitzucha Elo Letzora Atzma, U Ma Naase Hochi Ka Omar. So what Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak is telling us, first of all, let us focus not on the children of these unions, but rather let us focus on the couple themselves, the Tzora Atzma. And the point of the source is explained here by the Gemara. The Uma Naase Hochi Komar. Hanoch Hochi Komar is thusly, you are to understand the source. Hanoch Tzoros the Beis Hillel the Beis Shammai. The Tzoros of Beis Hillel. Those, that means that they married, the Tzoros Ervo, according to Beis Hillel, would have married an outsider. Le Beis Shammai Hechi Navid Luhu. According to Beis Shammai, now these women who married a new husband, but an outsider, not her husband's brother, they married an outsider. According to Beis Shammai, what should we do with these women? After all, in the eyes of Beis Shammai, what took place was a violation of a Yavama Lishut. What should we do with them? Lichlitzu Mimasi Agavayu. If we say that they should go to their brothers-in-law and remove his shoe, that will make them disgusting to their current husbands. The chitema limasanse, let us say, go ahead, who cares? If you have a tzoras erva that married Lashuk, let her do chalitza now, and the fact that her husband might find that reprehensible. As we said before, who cares? So that you can't argue. You can't say, just go ahead and insist on her doing chalitza now as a married woman, because Dorocheha Darchino v'chos nesivas shalom, the ways of the Torah, ways of pleasantness, and all its paths are peace. So that to expect a married woman to remove the shoe of her former husband's, her former husband's brother's shoe, that will denigrate her in the eyes of her husband, and that runs counter to the Torah approach to halacha, which is one of the of ways of pleasantness. And as you can see, we're in the middle of a marking scheme of a series of attempts to show that Beis Shammai actually followed their own teaching, but we're in the context of the Daf Yomi, so we've gone over our quota, so to speak, by spilling over onto Daf Tes Vav. So before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.